Hello, this is Gideon Rossin, and this is a response to B'day for the 27th of Kislev, the third day of Chanukah, which is the Yortzeit for my father and my teacher, Ari Rothstein, Ari Ben Yosef Alevi, Alev HaShalom, and I hope that our learning today will be a commemoration of all he tried to instill in me and of the yearning to be an Oved Hashem, a complete Oved Hashem as much as possible, and all of my meager attempts to do so, and to learn Torah, and to teach Torah, and to apply Torah into my life, stem from the model that he set for me and the ideals in which he and my mother, Tibbutz L'chaim Tovim V'Aruchim, instilled in me. For today, the 27th of Kislev, I, as I've been noting all throughout Chanukah, not remembering to look for tshuvot that have the date of that day of Chanukah in them, but I found a tshuva, and I'm cheating a little bit, as I sometimes do, because A, it's a fascinating tshuva, and B, it's an opportunity to learn from Ravad Yosef. Ravad Yosef in Yabia Omer doesn't often date his own tshuvot, but every so often he mentions other dates, and in this case, the date of 27th of Kislev came up in a tshuva that I think is a model or is an example of how the halachic process works that I think is very interesting. This is from Yabia Omer, the 8th volume, Evan HaEzer, Responsum Yud Aleph. And the question is, and this came up, this is a tshuva, the latest things that he quotes are from like 1988. So I think this is a tshuva he must have written in the late 80s, and it's a discussion of whether the Ethiopian Jews, who were known as the Falashas, who I think call themselves the Falashmura, whatever the right term for them is, now they're just known as the Ethiopians, because thank God they're the vast majority of them are in Israel, and they are the Ethiopian Jews in Israel, and they have their issues today. But when they came to Israel, there was some question about their Jewishness. And that's because for all that they declared themselves Jewish, and they thought of themselves as Jewish, their practices were very different from regular Jewish practice, and they seem to have no knowledge whatsoever of Torah Shebaal Peh, of the oral law. And that created questions as to whether they were actually Jewish, because the Judaism they practiced was nothing like ours. So there's any number of possibilities of how that could have occurred. It could be there were Jews who completely forgot the tradition. It could be there were Jews who descended from people who never knew the oral law just because they were unlearned, right? It could be that they met up with Jews at some point and they adopted some of their practices and even got hold of a Torah, but then didn't know what they were doing with it, or it could be other things. So that became a question. There's a question, actually, that we find out in this Tshuva that had already arisen as early as the 29th of Adar of Tavshin Yud Dalet of 1954, when Rav Yitzchak Isaac Alevi Herzog was the chief rabbi of Israel, and he wrote a letter about the Ethiopians, and he wasn't sure that they were Jewish, because, and this is what Ravad Yosef is reporting, and so part of what's going to be interesting in this Jew is watching Ravad Yosef respond or react to the really the majority of the opinions that he's going to quote are going to say that we have doubts, A, about their Judaism, and B, about their ability to marry other Jews, for a reason we're going to get into here, and how he's going to react to that. And that'll be interesting to watch him struggle and fight against what seems like the weight of opinion going the other way. As a young man, in 1954, Rav Yosef was 34, so he was a much younger man than Rav Herzog. Rav Herzog is the Rav HaRashi, and the Rav Herzog writes a letter doubting whether they're actually Jewish because researchers had claimed that they come from a stock that wasn't Jewish. So then it might be that they converted, but if they converted, you'd have to know they converted validly with a valid Jewish court, and there was no reason to think that in Ethiopia at any time in the past, there was a valid Jewish court for conversion. So if that's true, and also, since they're on the oral law, we know that, and they still claim they've never had the oral law, it means that they loaned Gairu al minat lishmar yadu chalanu. They didn't convert to observe our Judaism. And as we've seen together, in the context of a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein's about whether a woman could convert to marry a Kohen, if one converts without the intent to keep all the mitzvot, and they have no clue as to what all the mitzvot are, that conversion isn't valid. Therefore, Rav Herzog thought, even if they had converted, it was a conversion that was al minat lishmor kol haTorah kula chutz midiktok echad midivrei sofer. It's like they converted with the intent not to keep everything, with the intent to reject some things as not obligatory upon them, and that invalidates a conversion. A very important point about conversion. That was Rav Herzog's point. So therefore, he said, when he repeated this in another letter from the 3rd of Shvat of Tavshin Tet Vav of 1955, he says maybe it was a not fully orthodox court, like a court of Tzdukim, a Beit Din of Tzdukim, or of Karaites, or something like that, who originally converted them. And therefore, he felt they had to convert. They should convert in front of court, meaning he wasn't having any problems with accepting them as coming into the Jewish people, but he felt that they had to convert. Now, There's background to all this, which doesn't come up in this tshuva at all, but it's something that's relevant today and worth not ignoring, but was not true anyway whatsoever, as far as I know. I might have written up Ramosha's tshuva about this, or I saw Ramosha's tshuva about this, where Ramosha says, you know, if you claim that you don't want to take them as Jews for some reason, there's a lot of racism there. He says, that's just racism. So it's important to separate that issue, right? They cannot be allowed to come into any of this, the question of whether color of skin matters to us, because color of skin cannot be allowed to matter to us. The question here is a halachic question that Rav Yosef is struggling with, and we're going to see he's going to be very much in favor of leniency on this issue. He's going to be the most lenient of all these poskim. So, but it's important to be sure that we understand that, let's say, when Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote it, because he says it explicitly, but also when Rav Herzog wrote it, the issue isn't the color of the skin. The issue is, halakhically, how do we know these people are Jewish? They come and they claim they're Jewish, but the Judaism they claim to is very different than the Judaism we know, and how do we know what's going on with them? So, Rav Avad Yosef writes, and I didn't understand at the time, I was very surprised at the time, that why it would be that Rav Herzog would reject the words of Geonei Olam. We're going to see that it's the Radvaz. The Radvaz had been sure, that the Radvaz is writing in the 1500s. So 400 years before Rav Herzog, the Radvaz had said that they were from Shevet Dan. And Rav Avad Yosef says, and I don't understand why, just because researchers doubt that they're Jewish. Now, the research they were talking about, you know, I think had done anthropological research. Maybe they would have done genetic research. And none of that would have mattered, I think, to Rav Avad Yosef, because he's saying, just because scientists say something, we have a firm halakhic tradition, mi nidche lifnei mi, he says, who do we push aside before whom? Whereas Rav Herzog, who had a PhD in chemistry, and who originally wanted to claim that what now many people think of as Tchelet is Tchelet, and then he got misled and whatever, and he came up with a different answer to that question. But, or was that Rav Winterman? No, it was Rav Herzog. Anyway, Rav Herzog was a very educated man in scientific education as well as other things, and therefore he apparently thought the researchers' words, the scholars, the academics' evaluation of the Ethiopians was relevant. And Rav Yosef is somewhat surprised by that. He says we have a tradition from Brother Radvaz. But he says, since Rav Herzog was already doing it, and he already said they should recircumcised, not fully recircumcised. What happens when you have a circumcision that we have doubts about in halacha is you do what's called a hatafat damri. If the circumcision took off the important parts of the body, the necessary parts of the body for it to be a valid circumcision, but we're not sure if it was done for the right reasons or in the right way, so then we do a hatafat damri, which means we just draw a little bit of blood and they go to mikvah. So that's what the Rav Herzog had said they should do. And at the time, so he called that it's called a Giyur L'Chumrah. The person thinks they've converted, but we're not positive the conversion was valid, and therefore we say, you know what, so convert again just in case. And the Ethiopians, okay, but that refers to them as Falashim. Falashas, I think at the time, it wasn't considered that being called a Falasha was the negative thing that it is now considered. So the Falashas who had come, the Ethiopians who had come, were just a few in the 50s. There weren't that many. And they weren't particularly opposed to it, meaning they came to Israel. You said, we'd love to accept you as Jews. We'd love to make you citizens, but we need you to do this and this. They said, fine, let's do this and this. So since that was true at the time, Rabbi Yosef says, I didn't want to disagree. But I didn't think it was right back then. And my opinion is that we should rely on the post and say that they're full Jews in every single way, and they don't need a giyur, they don't need a conversion, even l'chumrah. So that's what Rav Yosef would have held. Now, by the time he's writing this, I mean, he's concluding this from the late 80s, so already in the mid-80s to late 80s, you have many, many more Ethiopians coming to Israel, and it became a big problem, and the Ethiopians became very insulted by the idea that they should need to convert again. And therefore, it became a big political issue in addition to a halakhic issue, and I forget the eventual compromise that was reach, but it was a big, big problem. So Rav Yosef is dealing with this. He's dealing with a political reality that you have many, many people who are being offended by the claim that they have to reconvert to be Jews. And he says, and I saw that the Tzitz Eliezer in volume 12 cited this Radvaz, but also doubted whether we can rely on that. First of all, he points out the Radvaz in another tshuva writes that it was well known that there was a lot of wars in Africa, in the Ethiopian regions of Africa, and some of those people were Muslims, and some of those people were Christians, and some of those people were Jews, you know, Ethiopian Jews from the tribe of Dan. And then the Radvaz writes, V'chol yom shuvim elu me'elu. They take captives one from the other all the time. Meaning there's a mixing of populations. Yotzei, sheyesh ben hafalashim tarovet mimot acherot. The Rav says, so it would seem then that the people who come to us as Ethiopian Jews are really a mixture of all sorts of people over the centuries and over the times of all these wars, and therefore you can't trust they're Jewish. And Rav Yosef apologizes for disagreeing, but he says he can't be that the Radvaz thought that that was true when he writes that, because the Radvaz thinks that you treat them as Shevet Dan. What he only meant was, says Rav Yosef, that they take them as slaves or they sell them, because otherwise the Radvaz should have mentioned that you have a problem about whether or not they can marry other Jews. The Radvaz doesn't mention any of that. So he should have said they need a year of Lechonra. But in Tzemen, again, since the Ezra says there's all these researchers in our times who say they're not Jewish, and again, Rav Yosef is surprised by this whole idea. It's interesting to watch. I assume it's sincere, but it's interesting to watch that his connection to and his reliance upon scientific research or anthropological research, whatever the kind of research of the day, is much more tenuous, and he's much less ready to rely on it in the face of a tradition of the Radvaz saying they're from the tribe of Dan. Let me remember here, I almost forgot to say it. I recently saw an article about a woman who made Aliyah, I think from France to Israel. This woman, I think, is half African-American, meaning I believe her mother was Jewish and her father was African-American. So she's straight up Jewish. But she grew up in a home that obviously wasn't connected to Judaism very much. And she eventually married, I think, an Ethiopian man. And who's an Ethiopian man from Ethiopia, like, or from somewhere in Africa. Maybe it wasn't Ethiopian. Somewhere in Africa. And they were making Aliyah. However it came about, they were making Aliyah. And so I think he had converted, because he clearly had to convert, and he had now converted, and they were going to be married. It's like one of these feel-good stories of the Israeli, which was published, I think, somewhere in the Israeli press, about this couple making Aliyah. But along the way, he said, we have a tradition that we're from the tribe of Dan, so it's you know, like coming home for me. And it was such an interesting thing, meaning, let's assume for a second that the halachic niceties of this question are important ones. So the Radvaz says in the 1500s that the Ethiopians are from the tribe of Dan, and he has a really good, solid source and tradition that's true. So one possibility is to say the researchers have it completely right, and we don't know what he was talking about, and it's not true. That's one way you can go. But another way you can go, which is, I think, more of Herzog and Ratzitz Eliezer were doing, is to say that let's assume the Radvaz is right. There's all sorts of things to think that what the researchers are writing has correctness to it. So, for example, if there were wars all the time and there's a mixing of populations, that's one thing. Or even if there weren't wars, even if just after the time of the Radvaz, people didn't care so much and weren't so careful about who they married. Think about in America today, they say the intermarriage rate is 50%. So if 50% of Jews are intermarrying or more, but let's assume for a second it's 50%. And half of those people are fathers who are intermarrying, half of those are mothers. And the mother who are intermarrying, their kids will be Jewish. But of their kids, half of them will be boys. If they intermarry, their kids will be Jewish. So how quickly would the Jewish people, even though they still identify as Jewish, right, if they don't think about who they're marrying or what constitutes conversion, and they're marrying, so they could have a whole bunch of people who say they're Jews, but it turns out that they're really not Jews. So the question in America today, I think already, there are people who say that if you go to people from outside of a tradition, a family that has been extremely careful about not having intermarriage in its midst, and you go to the other ones, how many of them are really halakhically Jewish? That's already a real question. So I think that's what they're saying. Rav Yosef is getting all upset about how much they're relying on external scientific research, but he's not really paying attention to the fact that over 500 years, if you have people who aren't careful about whom they marry, even if you start out at a point where they're all Jewish and they're all from the tribe of Dan, it could be a big issue. The other undercurrent here is this interesting question of the tribe of Dan and the 10 lost tribes and when we will find them and how we'll find them and things like that. And if Dan comes first, that would be also an interesting piece of this whole puzzle. In any case, so Rav Yosef is unhappy with her, not unhappy, but he's disagreeing with Herzog and with the Tzitz Eliezer, and he points out that we have a halach in Kiddushin on Ayin Vav Amid Bet 76b, that you need two witnesses to claim that somebody who says they're Jewish isn't Jewish. And there's a shut in the Maharash Dam, who's also in like the 1500s. There was a man who people had claimed was a mamzer. There's like a rumor, not a claim. There was a rumor he was a mamzer, and then one person came into the Beit Din and said, I know that he's a mamzer, and I know that his mother was having an affair, and she got pregnant through an affair, and therefore this he is a mamzer, or whatever else had happened. And the Maharash Dam said, you don't believe the one witness, even in terms of checking him after him, meaning that the only way that you get to a definition of somebody is lacking in their lineage is through two witnesses, and before that you don't need anything. So here too, all you have are these chokrim, you have these researchers, that's all you have. You have, I don't think they had genetic evidence back then, but you have this, just their claims, and obviously that's not nearly enough for us to worry about, which is really, really hard to watch, or interesting to watch. And then he says, and I've heard that Rav Moshe Feinstein, who does have a tshuva like this, and I feel like I might have done this before with him, so it might be this topic a little too interesting to me, and I'm letting my own interests and perspectives get a little too involved in my choice of responsa, but I certainly saw Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva. He writes a letter to his son, to his grandson, Rav Mordechai Tendler. He says, even though the Radvaz said they're from the Dun, he too, Rav Moshe, thought it's hard to rely on that because it's not clear the Radvaz knew for sure what was going on. That's something that Rav Yosef is going to complain about too. How can you claim the Radvaz didn't know? Radvaz would never have written unless he knew it carefully and well. So that's another issue to think about when important rabbis write responsa. How much do they make sure to verify the underlying facts of what they're discussing? And Rav Yosef is saying, for sure they didn't. Rav Feinstein is saying, you know, I don't know for sure. I don't know. I'm not. Why would I be sure that the Radvaz, you know, would have gone to Ethiopia or done whatever needed to be done to be sure that they came from the tribe of Dan? Besides that, Rav Moshe Feinstein said, and it's been 500 years, who knows if things haven't, or 400 years, who knows if things haven't changed over that time. So Rav Yosef responds, I understand. The Rav is a great man. He wouldn't have said it unless he had reason and good evidence to say it. And once he's established it, then they have a chazaka. Once they have a chazaka, we allow groups of people to stay with that chazaka, with that assumption of their lineage through long periods of time. So we've done it for other groups to come to Eretz Yisrael, with the Jews of Kuchin, the Jews of Russia, the Jews of Germany. There are lots and lots of Jews who come from various places where we might have had some reason to think. Now, I think Russia and Germany aren't great examples because those had Jewish communities that were established much longer and a much longer tradition, meaning beyond the 1500s into the 1800s, before we had any question about them whatsoever. So that might be why we allow it, but the Jews of Kuchin is a little clearer, a little better of an example, a little more relevant of an example. And then he says, and I also, by the way, oh, so maybe he's not writing this in 88, maybe he's when he's rewriting it for the purpose of putting it in the Sefer, he says, and now also I got a copy of what the chief rabbin had decided on the 27th of Kislev of Tavshin Memchet of 1987, which says that everything said in the tshuva of the Radvaz and also the Maharikash about the Judaism of the people who come from Ethiopia. So it's clear they're from Shevet Dan. Everybody agrees to that, and nobody can disagree with that psak. However, writes the Rabbi Rashi, now I just point out that Rabbi Yosef is saying that that's what the chief rabbin is saying. It's odd the chief rabbin would say that because the Tzitz Eliezer had written that he wasn't sure you had to rely on that psak, and Rav Herzog had written that he wasn't sure you had to rely on that psak. But in any case, they said that's the accepted psak of the Jewish people, that they're from the tribe of Dan. However, since there is a doubt created by how long they have been separated from the Jewish people for thousands of years. They were separated from us, and we'd had no real contact with them. And therefore, you have to worry that non-Jews mixed in with them, and therefore you have to maintain the custom we had until now, that they should have a Gerut Lechum, or they should convert for just in case, right? They should have a Gerut Lechum. They should have a conversion to be stringent about this issue. They should have a circumcision or a Tafat Tambrit or taking a drop of blood, and they should go to a mikvah, and they should do it without a bracha. Now, doing it without a bracha is because we're not really converting them. We're just doing it just in case. You don't make a bracha, and they should make sure to accept all the mitzvot, and then all doubt will go away. So that's a tshuva that sort of tries to play both. That's an idea, a solution. It tries to play both sides. It says, yes, you're certainly Jewish, and please convert. So Rav Yosef says it's very surprising, because if there's no doubt that they're Jewish, then how could they write that you should convert l'chumra, which is true. So I think the answer is that what the chief rabbi was trying to do was they were trying to assuage the Ethiopians' feelings, saying it's not that we want to doubt you at all, it's that we've got some concerns about things that have happened over the course of time. And that's sort of the middle position. But Rav Yosef said, but if there's really any real doubt like that, then the Radvaz would never have stayed silent. He would have said it too. And he would have said, let's do a gir l'chumra in terms of the people coming to Israel. So Radvaz doesn't seem to think that way. The Radvaz, after he writes that from the tribe of Dan without any doubt, he says, but it's true that they didn't have Torah scholars in their midst. They didn't have the real tradition. So they took the pshat of psukim, they took the literal meaning of verses. And if somebody would teach it to them, they would learn the right way. They're not kofrim, they're not heretics. They're people who never learn the right way. So he just teach them and they'll become good, fine Jews. Then he ends, though, the Radvaz, that in terms of their lineage, I am nervous, I'm concerned, that whether or not, let's say their Kiddushin is Kiddushin, maybe they get married the right way, but they don't have bills of divorce the right way, and then we don't know whether they might be Mamzerim, meaning, and this happens in our days, if people get divorced without a proper get, and then the wife gets married and has children. So those children are, through nobody's fault really, mamzerim. And then they can't marry other Jews. So if the Ethiopians have spent hundreds of years without Torah, if their marriages count as marriages for whatever reason, let's say, for example, let's suppose there are those who have claimed that if a man and woman live together and everybody knows they intend to be married, and there are Jews around, then they're married halachically. If that were true, then if the wife left at some point, if they got divorced at some point, and they didn't have a bill of divorce, then she's still married, and then any children that come from that are mamzerim, and that continues for all the generations. So that's also one of the reasons, by the way, why if the conclusion were to be that the Ethiopians are not Jewish, and therefore have to convert, it gets rid of that entire issue. Let's suppose you have a population of 1,000 people, and let's suppose we don't know their status, but it's likely that 300 of them would be mamzerim if we thought, would be unable to marry other Jews if we thought that they had been Jewish from birth. But if they convert, then they can marry, they can't marry a kohen, but they can marry anybody else, right? The women can't marry kohanim, but they can marry anybody else. So that sort of comes into play here also, which is the stringency and which is the leniency. It sounds like a leniency to say, oh, of course we know you're Jewish, of course we accept you, except that comes with certain downsides. So that's what the Ravaz had written. But then the Ravaz wrote another tshuva about a Kushit, a woman from Ethiopian descent. And there he writes that he has a couple of doubts about why you have to worry about her. And therefore he finds a way to allow her to marry other Jews and not to worry that she's a mamzeret, that she was illegitimate. And Rav Yosef, he also found a response like that for an old Rishon LeZion. Let's remember the tradition of Rishon LeZion, which is like the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, goes hundreds of years back. So in the late 1800s, there was a Rishon LeZion named Rafael Meir Panazil in Israel, and he had a similar case, and he wrote, even though the Radvaz thought maybe there might be an issue with Mamzerut, he found a way to be matirit. Rav Moshe Feinstein also thought Ladina, you didn't, that halachically, you didn't have to worry that they were mamzerim, like the Radvaz, right? So Rav Moshe Feinstein accepted that issue, and so too the Marikash, that we do that with Karaites, right? Karaites have the same issue. They didn't get divorced in halachic ways because they didn't believe in the traditions of Chazal, and yet the tradition became that if a Karaite came and said, I'd like to become closer to traditional, real, what we think of as authentic Torah Judaism, a phrase that I don't usually say. So our tradition is to accept them, and we don't say, oh, maybe they're mamzerim, because maybe this person is a descendant of a woman who had gotten divorced and didn't have a get. So yeah, and we have a Bahari Beirav who says that. So Rav Yosef says, so it must be that when the Radvaz originally wrote, you have to worry about these issues, he later on thought through it more carefully and came to a different conclusion. And then he notes, so the Ezra had another reason why he thought there was a problem with the Ethiopians, because they don't know the halachos of who can marry whom. They don't know dine arayot. Right? So he says, so we have to worry about that. So Rav Yosef points out that the Ramah in Darkei Moshe says that in terms of the Anusim, which are the conversos, used to be called the Maranos, the Jews in Spain who were forced to convert to Christianity and to live as Christians. And then what happened in the 1500s, in the 14... 1400s, 1500s, even into the 1600s, I think, there were some of those who had this tradition who would find a way to flee eventually and then would want to come back to Judaism, either come back or convert. So if they were going to convert because they don't think they're Jewish anymore, that's not a problem. But let's suppose they come back and they say, no, our tradition is, oh, we have always only married Jews, other conversos. We've always stayed within the religion. If the Sicilian was right, you have to worry about a rayot, then you might think here too. So the Rambam writes that no, you can marry them like you would marry any non-Jew who came and converted, because if you say that they married non-Jews, so the halacha is that if a Jewish woman marries a non-Jew, the baby is a perfectly valid Jew and that baby can marry any other Jew that they want to. And if they don't marry non-Jews, right, so then they only marry each other, so then it means that they know that Jews are only supposed to marry certain people, and they also wouldn't marry relatives, says the Ramah, because non-Jews also don't marry relatives. So therefore, Vayisif says the same thing should be true of the Ethiopians. Either they married non-Jews, but if they married Jews, the baby's fine. It's not a problem of Mamzerud. And if they married only Jews, then presumably they also didn't marry relatives. The challenge, I think, would be in terms of the Tzitzit Ezra could easily respond that there are arayot that other people don't consider relatives that we do consider relatives, and those could create Mamzerut. Maybe they did that. But this is Rav Yosef's tshuva, so we won't go into that. But I think to me it's a model of how much he is working to be sure to say that they're just fine and there's no problem. Then he says, I spoke to the leaders of the Ethiopian community, its elders and its Kohanim, because they have kinds of priests of their own as well, and they said that in their world, they have young marriage. Marriage happens from the age of 14, and sometimes even younger. And they don't do an act of kiddushin like we do with putting a ring on a finger and saying Hariat Mekudesh Li. They don't do that. So there's no official ceremony of kiddushin. And even when they get together to be married, they don't have as a formal ceremony with witnesses, so there's no kiddushin bia, or they think they're already married, so there's no sense of this will create the marriage, and there's no kiddushin, because he doesn't say, I'm using this time of our living together as a way for us to get married. So Rav Yosef is trying to say there's never been a marriage, and therefore you're not going to need a get, and therefore you don't have a mamzerus problem. Why has there never been a marriage? Because that's not their ceremony. The ceremony they have doesn't include that part of it, and if it's not there, it's not there. So in our Gemara, that we have a principle, in Adam Oseh Bilato Bilat Znut, that people don't, this is a complicated issue for today, because today there are people who claim that it's not true anymore, that people do this, but the Gemara assumed that when people have relations, when men and women have relations, they mean it for marriage. And a man wouldn't just randomly sleep around, as it were. That was the Gemara's assumption. That creates all sorts of halachic presumptions, such as, if a man and a woman are living together, we assume they mean to be married to each other, and that creates halachic issues. But Rabbi Yosef is saying that whole problem, that whole issue, is when a man intends to marry her, but in our case, he doesn't intend to marry her again because they had a wedding ceremony. Once they had a wedding ceremony, if that wedding ceremony isn't halakhically valid as a wedding ceremony, we don't think he ever intends to marry her again because he thinks he's already married to her. So he's never going to marry her again. And the original thing wasn't a marriage by our lights, then they really never got married. So he points out that an earlier Tshuva Yabia Omer, he had written that the opinion of the majority of Rishonim is, in terms of civil marriage, that she doesn't need a get. There's no halakhic reason why she needs a get for the same reason. Because in a civil marriage, they got married halakhically invalidly, but they thought it was a valid marriage, and therefore, we don't have to worry about it because they never intended to get married again. Then he says, one last problem is that he saw a tshuva in the Tashbetz who said, you might think that if people make it clear that they intend to be married, and that therefore any later time they live together is also for the purpose of kiddushin, and as long as there are Jews in the city who can give valid testimony, and they know that they get together and that they live together, we would say that they are witnesses, and this is a kiddushin, and therefore you need a get. So Rav Yosef says, but it's odd because we have a halacha that says if somebody does an invalid kiddushin and then later gives her gifts that would make it a valid kiddushin if he intended to, we don't worry about it because he didn't intend to because he was relying on the first one. And therefore, according to everything that he said, he thinks that the Ethiopian Jews are perfectly fine Jews. He thinks you rely on the tradition of the Radvaz. They're from the tribe of Dan. You don't have to worry that they intermarry. You don't have to worry that they married other, you know, other relatives who they shouldn't have married. You don't have to worry they didn't have kitten. You don't have to worry all these things. And really, you don't need any kind of conversion, and they can marry other Jews, and they're just fine. And that is what Rav Yosef thought about the Ethiopian Jews. And that is responsible day for the 27th of Kislev. Have a happy Hanukkah.